Welcome back to Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. Today's segment, Pennies, Promises, and Poverty. Can policies break the bank? It's all about the tightrope walk between fiscal responsibility and the quest for social progress. We're tackling the big questions. Can the promises made by policymakers turn into a financial nightmare? Or are they the key to solving our most pressing issues? We'll break down the dollars and cents behind those ambitious policy proposals and see if they're truly paving the way to prosperity or just shuffling around the budget like Monopoly money. Buckle up as we dissect the real cost of policymaking and whether those promises are worth every penny or just a costly gamble. Welcome back to Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Villain, and today we're taking a hard look at a problem that's been around longer than we've had dollars to our name, poverty. With me is our special guest, Jagazis, and we're going to break down some of the latest poverty policies like they owe us some money. So, Jagazis, how are you, and are you there?
I'm here. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I am doing as well as could be expected. So I guess I ask you the question, well, how do you feel about this situation, poverty in America?
I mean, so for some people, obviously, they think that they have a handle on it. Or they think that it might not affect them. But I don't think they realize that for most Americans, it's knocking right at their front door, you know? We need to think about the policies that are aimed at fixing it. We need to see exactly what's happening and what's just spare change.
Yeah.
Unintended.
And that's one of the key things. The policies out there, and there are already policies, but these policies that are already here do affect poverty. But maybe not in a more grandiose way or a negative kind of way. We have one policy in particular called the Universal Basic Income, or UBI. Well, let's kick things off with one of the flashiest promises out there, UBI, free money for everyone. It sounds like a game show, right? The idea is to get every American a set amount of cash each month to help fight poverty. But is that really going to work? If you're just giving money to people, what could happen? What do we know can happen if you're giving out free money? Inflation, and everybody's running around talking, oh, inflation, the sky is falling, whatever. But if you're just giving out free money, that leads to inflation. I mean, that's just economics 101. But Jagazis, what do you think about it?
Well, I mean, it's kind of twofold, right? It's like giving someone a bucket and then like trying to ask them to empty out a sinking ship. Like the money. Okay, so I love universal basic income as a concept, but it almost seems like utopian. It seems like it's too good to be true. because like you said, it does relate to other things that are prices are going to raise, etc. But not necessarily, because the money's not coming from Bezos, right? It'd be coming from the government. And we have more than enough money to spend. Our deficit would go up, but I don't care about the debt. I don't owe it back. It's not my debt. But
future baby's debt.
Yeah, I don't care about it. And so, but the thing is, like, we actually, near me, we have a town called Stockton, California. And one of the youngest mayors of all time was elected. There's actually a documentary about this available on Netflix if you wanted to watch it. Yeah, and he implemented universal basic income in Stockton for the lowest, not for everybody, but for the lowest paid people and people who are in poverty. And it turned Stockton right around. We used to have literal videos when I was a kid that were like bootleg videos that we used to watch called Stockton Gone Wild, because there's always like people dancing on top of cars, the gas stations, getting hype, shooting people. It's a huge gang area, but they turned it all around by implementing universal basic income. Because if you can meet people's basic needs and give them a way that they know that they have enough money to eat food or go out of their way even to get a car, they know that they're going to have at least enough money to be able to pay their car note.
Yeah.
And that means they can use that car to get a job. That means they can use just that time and that stress that they would have had on other things, or whether they were selling drugs, whatever they need to do to scrape by, they can cut out. And so employment actually raises and people have more disposable income to spend, which then helps the economy. When the economy is healthier, inflation actually drops. And I just want to point out that inflation is vastly caused by corporations, not even by policies.
For sure.
It's just price gouging. So if we can give, I think it's kind of like arming people. If we can arm the general American to stand up against corporations, it's starting to make it more of an equal fight. And that's what universal basic income kind of does. It gives us a way to fight back a little bit.
Yeah, and exactly. But while getting $1,000 a month might sound great, and it does, what happens when rent goes up by $1,000 a month? Inflation's got a funny way of eating your lunch before you even sit down. So what's you... And you can see this everywhere. When all the houses started going up in price, and you're in California, and you know how that went down, people are like, oh my gosh, I bought this house for $132,000 25 years ago, and it's worth $632,000 now. But guess what? If you sell that house at $632,000 and you try to go to another house, it's going to be $632,000.
Yeah, your net profit is nothing.
Yeah, and what does that do for you? It does nothing. So don't be deceived, because everything that's out there always has a drawback that you can actually see boiling in the background. I always say it, if it sounds too good or too sweet, you need to get some aspartame and get some consciousness on what it is, because there's always somebody pulling those strings as well.
And that's just what capitalism is, you know? Like, at the end of the day, capitalism is a broken game. And like you said, inflation will go up, not necessarily because the money has to come from somewhere, but when they know that they can get more money out of you. If they knew every person had an extra $1,000 of disposable income, they would raise prices just for the fun of it. And that's the thing. When we're in this country ran by corporations, we're playing a losing game. It just is what that is.
Yeah. And if you think about it, guys, if corporations have their finger hold on us, and they're like, okay, yeah, I'll raise your wage. But then they raise everything else around you to meet the wage they just gave to you. And then on top of this, guys, look, Uncle Sam's going to get his share. You're going to get taxed on that $1 up to 5 to 6 times for every transaction. So you're talking about income taxes, regular taxes, the tax that's on gas, on food, your home, because you have to pay a property tax for stuff you already own. You're being taxed into oblivion. I mean, if you don't look around, pretty soon your life would just become a tax, right? I mean, that's what I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And it's like you're saying, I mean, raising wages is just like telling everyone to get a bigger ladder, but the problem is the building's on fire. Like, you're climbing into a fiery pit of hell. Like, it causes this issue. We're not fixing the system. And I know people aren't going to want to hear it, but like how I brought up that the capitalism effect, like just being in a capitalist society is the problem. We don't have a good way out of that. Like, even if we were to adopt a whole bunch of socialist policies tomorrow, the way that we're built as a country and the way that we give personhood to corporations means that it's not feasible. And we've built our own grave in that case. So it's like robbing Peter to pay Paul. We're always going to be taking from one thing and increasing the issues somewhere else. And that is how the system is built. So without an overhaul, the system is stuck.
Right. And it's stuck that way. I am a capitalist because it always gives me that air to keep striving for more. She keeps striving for more because, I mean, if you think about it, there's going to eventually become a ceiling where we're all at the ceiling trying to break that glass to go higher, and there is no higher because capitalism can only go so far. Thank goodness we're a democratic republic with just capitalistic endeavors. So, but that's the interesting thing. UBI is something that everybody should be looking into to cure some of the poverty and people who are struck by poverty, like in Stockton, California, and see if that plays to a louder narrative on the global stage. But there is another policy. Policy number two, raising the minimum wage. Now, how long have we been trying to do this? Thank you, McDonald's. Next up, the classic move, raising the minimum wage. Some folks are out calling for a $15 an hour minimum wage nationwide. It sounds good, right? Lift people out of poverty with a higher paycheck. But let's talk about the flip side of that. Jagazes, what's the flip side of raising the minimum wage for people who are on the McDonald's burger station and those who are, you know, hopping those fries? Something's got to get.
Well, the flip side, like we pointed out before, is the fact that corporations are going to try to make their expenses one way or another. They're going to raise their prices to try to cover up for what they're losing, because the way that corporations are ran is if they have a material cost, for example, if they have a product that costs $5 to make, if that product, all of a sudden the materials go up and it costs $5.10 to make, what are they going to do? They're going to pass that on to the retail price of the consumer. They're not going to say, oh, let us make 10 cents less, even though we're selling this for $10 already. So they're already making $5. They're going to refuse to say, okay, now we're only going to make $4.90. They will never go backwards. So the issue is, now what are they going to do? Instead of it being a $10 pair of pants, they're going to raise that to $15. So not only are they making up for that 10 cent loss, they're raising it another $5 on the consumer. So they're always going to pass off that buck. But that, on the flip side of it, they do realize that if we have healthy competition within the states, which is part of our issue too, is not just corporations being treated like people, it's also monopolies and people like BlackRock owning so many different industries, that if there's healthy competition, they can't do that. They can't raise their prices absurdly. And if you look at places like California, where we have had minimum wage increases, prices are still relatively stable in terms of they're the same. If you go to Texas and look at the cost of a McDonald's burger, it's going to be the same as here in California, if not less sometimes. Our actual costs, even though fast food workers now get $20 an hour, which is more than the 15 minimum in California. Yeah, they're making more than the minimum wage right now. Because of the law that they passed. Mm-hmm. So minimum wage is only $15, but fast food workers specifically get $20. And the cost has gone up across the entire country, but not more so in California than anywhere else.
Yeah, but this, gone up, talking about just the cost of minimum wage, because it's been stuck at $7.25. Exactly,
and that needs to rise federally. I mean, there's only a couple states who abide by the federal minimum wage, and like, shame on them. If you're out there, you know who you are. But like, what the f? Every other state, like 47 of them, have raised their minimum wage.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous that they require the federal minimum wage to move before they do that. Like, they're the ones who are keeping their people poor.
Right.
If I lived in one of those states, I don't know, I would burn it down. But
I mean, yeah, and with the Walmart, They use their employees as a subsidy, and they most of their employees have to file for some kind of welfare just to make ends meet. And that's
They spend those food stamps at Walmart. Walmart is double dipping. They pay them very little, then they don't have to pay them enough. So they go to the government to get money. That's a tax write-off for them. And then they turn right around and they spend that money where they work at Walmart.
Yeah, they get taxed five times on that food stamp. So I don't know what they do. But they could very well. But, you know, and this is the thing, guys. Small businesses, well, they're going to get hit and feel it the hardest. The big chains will survive because they have tons of money to blanket their fall. but your favorite mom and pop shop might close its doors because they can't afford to keep up. Is that really the win we're looking for,
Jagaina? Well, here's what I've always said. I've always said, if you can't afford the business, you shouldn't be in business, to be honest. If you can't afford to pay people a living wage, even without the federal minimum wage being going up, like if you're a mom and pop's business and the minimum wage is $15, you should be paying people $25 in the first place. You should be wanting to split that revenue and that profit with the people as much as you can. It should be, quote unquote, like a family. Like, I get why corporations don't pay more than the minimum because they don't know who you are. You're just another number. But especially mom and pop agencies, they should be paying people more. That should be the case. So if they can't afford to keep up with the minimum, then they are a failing business. And they, honestly, in my opinion, should fail.
And you're right. And I always tell people, whenever you sacrifice your dreams to live and partake in somebody else's dreams, there's a give and take. You're giving up something that you could easily do to push someone else's dreams further along, and you should be compensated. I mean, you really should be compensated, guys. I've had that happen to me so many times where you give up a dream for somebody else's dream, and then they pay you back by trying to manipulate the situation, cow tag you, you know, kind of gaslight you. But you got to get out of a situation like that. It's not a good thing. It's not a good fit for your mental stability, really.
No, yeah.
And then here we go, guys. Policy number three is affordable housing initiatives. And I'm not sure what you guys feel about affordable housing, but when I first got here to Texas, the housing was really affordable. You get a 6-bedroom, 3-bath for about $275,000.
Girl, what? State.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. But now, I think the median now in Texas is about $400,000 for something like that size. So I guess I'm saying, let's get into the housing. Every politician's favorite buzzword, affordable housing. There's a talk about building more low-cost homes to help people get a roof over their heads. But is building more really the answer? Jagaina, what do you think about building more affordable housing?
I think it's dumb. I think the building more housing isn't addressing the problem. You know, it's like you saying you can fix your car that has a dead engine just by putting more gas in it. Like, yeah, let's add fuel to the thing that's already not working. Like, the issue isn't that we don't have enough houses. Firstly, it is, like they said, affordable housing, which is very specifically like single family homes and apartments and stuff like that. They want to focus on the type of buildings that they're building. But I still don't think that's a solution to the problem, because it's not that we don't have enough houses. We have so many houses. We have more houses than there are people, but they sit vacant because nobody can afford the damn houses.
So how do we bring the cost down?
Well, that's the question. Well, firstly, we need to get rid of the big corporations that are buying up all the real estate.
Yes.
People that are investing, the Vanguard, the BlackRock. These people that are just buying millions of properties, things that would have been a single family home owned by one family being sold. Like you said, you bought it in 1970. Now you're selling it back to the market. It used to be a transfer from one individual to another individual.
Yeah.
And then now the corporations are coming in and saying, I'll take that. And they're bidding double. They're raising the prices with their bids.
It's destabilizing.
And then they hold on to that property, raising all of the ones around it. And the only one that wins is the corporations. The corporations should not be able to buy houses. That's what it is.
They shouldn't.
They should only be allowed to buy a retail property.
Yeah. And don't forget, in big cities where housing costs are already sky high, you can build all the affordable units you want, but you're still not addressing the reasons why prices are so insanely high in the first place. It's treating the system like a disease that has no cure. Because once those corporations buy up all those housing, they destabilize the market. They are the market. So, yeah.
Yeah, and if you build a nice, shiny building in a bad economy, for example, then you just have a monument. You have a big, empty, broken building. Because if someone can't afford to live there, you see it all the time, especially in LA. Like you mentioned LA, you see these brand new shiny buildings go up. They're like 18 stories tall. They're all condos, not even apartments, but condos for sale. And 70 to 80% of those buildings will sit empty.
Yes.
It is wild. They just have, they have all of these open spaces, but nobody wants to pay $1.5 million for a 2-bedroom apartment. and they just sit there and they think building these new things will be like, well, it's shiny, it's new, people want modern accessories and appliances, they're going to come flock to this. And I mean, some people do, but not many can afford it. So
it's true. Nobody can afford it. That's the problem with it.
And then they take tax write-offs. They take a loss and they just say, oh, well, I tried to build housing, mm-hmm. even if it's not affordable. But they say, I tried to build housing. I was doing a community thing. And those retail managers, the retail owners, get so much money in tax write-offs. If you can imagine building something that is $15 million for a building that then sits vacant, they get all $15 million of that written right off. Like, they don't care if they rent out or not.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. So FDR gave us social security nets, or the social nets of safety for America. So policy number four is expanding social security, or expanding social safety nets. So, all right, let's talk about social safety nets. Things like food stamps, unemployment benefits, and healthcare subsidies. These are designed to catch people when they fall. And they're great. We've been using this stuff since FDR, since 1945. But things happen out of nowhere. And the reality is most of them are already stretched thin, and we're still waiting on the checks to catch up with inflation. And I know inflation is going down, but Jacasus, do you think it's ever going to happen that we actually catch up with where we need to be to level out these social safety nets? Because I think you and I know, when we retire, I don't think there's going to be anything left in that piggy bank.
Retire. Yeah. Look, safety nets are great, but only if you can find one without holes, you know? People are going to be falling through all these little policy traps, if you will, and it doesn't cover everybody. So FDR had a really great idea when he set up these social safety nets, and it was a different time, a different economy. Corporations weren't doing this, whatever this is right now, where they own literally every industry. Like, we had monopolies, but they were able to fight against them with the antitrust laws. It wasn't like today, where you have Procter & Gamble owning cereal and also cars and also property and also they're making clothes and also, like, they don't own every freaking subsidy company. But he never even wanted it to end there. You know, he really wanted there to be a second New Deal. And he proposed even constitutional amendments that would have made things much more even and much more appropriate for Americans. But it fell through and he didn't get that done in his time, obviously. But it was a really good idea. If anyone wants to look that up, look up what he wanted to add to the Constitution, because he has some great ideas.
Yeah.
But we are already, I mentioned it earlier, we're backed into such a wall with capitalism that you can throw social safety nets at a lot of different things. And I think we should. Don't get me wrong. Don't say I'm thinking we're like, I'm not a Republican. I don't want to take away food stamps. I don't want to take away Medi-Cal.
I would never do that. No.
Yeah. Like, I want people to be able to have, especially the people who need it the most. I say let's increase the social safety nets for anybody. But when it comes down to things like retirement, like you mentioned, things that are being treated as if they are a social security thing when they should be more of a right, we're going to be lost. Like, right now, they're treating basically Social Security like it's unemployment, as if it's just like a temporary thing. Like, you're just going to be old for a couple of years, and that it's not the case. Yeah. Like,
people are living as well to their hundreds now. And it's like giving someone an umbrella in a hurricane. Sure, it helps, but you're still going to get soaked. These programs were designed in a different time, and now we're facing an economic storm they weren't built to handle. And that's the problem we're facing right now. So what do you think is the end result of this, Davis?
I wish I knew. I think it's going to collapse. Like, honestly, I think we're in the end of late stage capitalism. And unless we come up with a new economic system, it's not built to last. It's built for a couple people to win and everyone else collapses. So we already know who the winners are. We already know that Gates has won. We know Elon Musk has won. Bezos has won. But then that means the rest of us are losers, and they can only keep on winning so much. Like, once they've extracted all the profit from regular middle-class Americans, once we're getting to this point where we're at now, where people can't even afford to buy or invest in a home, and once everyone is already in debt and owing these corporations, there's no one else to take money from. You can go overseas and take money from them.
Get to eat the rich.
You know,
it's time to eat the rich.
It's going to be like that. It will not only just it out of necessity. You can only go so far and take so much from people, not until they rebel, but literally until there's nothing left to take. And they've already taken so much that we're reaching that point.
Yeah.
If you break into somebody's house and steal all their jewelry, you'd be dumb to go back the next day and break into their house to try to steal all their jewelry. It's gone.
Yeah.
There's nothing to take.
Conclusion. Yeah. So. But all right, so and the global ramifications of poverty's ripple effect, let's zoom out for a minute. Poverty isn't just a local problem, it's a global problem. And what happens in one country doesn't stay there. Local poverty can destabilize entire regions, which in turn affects the global economy. So even if you're living comfortably, poverty still finds a way to your doorstep. Is that true, Jigazes? Do you believe that has some kind of mythos in the reality of what we face with poverty?
Yeah, I mean, poverty is like a bad Wi-Fi signal. You know, it spreads, and then before you know it, everyone is dealing with lagging times. And it drags down everything around it. It drags down education. It drags down healthcare, the economy. If one part of the web weakens, the whole thing starts falling apart. And I think it's, like you said, it's a global ramification. It's something that infects like a disease. It goes from one place to another. Especially because we live in a new world where everything is very dependent upon trade, upon making exports for whatever your region is good at. And if that region falls, everything around it affects. I mean, we've seen the effects of modern warfare. We've seen what happens when we put sanctions, necessarily so, on Russia. When we cut off their economy, it's not just hurting Russia. It hurts everyone around Russia. And that is what's happening. It's like putting sanctions, and yeah, it's same, exactly. It's like putting sanctions on a personal level. Like the way that we're currently, unless we change the way policies are addressed, different regions are going to become destabilized, and that can lead to a lot of things. It could lead to a coup. It could lead to revolt.
Look at Venezuela. I mean,
that's exactly what I was going to say. Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. Well, I mean, we're all connected. You can't just ignore it because it's happening somewhere else. It's like climate change. Just because it's not getting you right now, today, doesn't mean it won't rock and roll tomorrow. It probably most likely will. The generational impact on the poverty trap is one that now it puts people in the poverty isn't just a today problem. It's a tomorrow problem, too. The longer someone stays in poverty, the harder it is to escape. It's like quicksand. And then the more you struggle, the deeper you sink in. I mean, what are your feelings about that, James? Do you think it's like something that can suck you in, your family in, generational wealth in? Poverty is like cancer, and it just chomps away at everything.
Absolutely. And it's not just the parents who suffer while they're raising kids. You know, the kids, if they're born into it, they're less likely to succeed, whether that be getting a decent education, whether that be purchasing things. I always say one of the most interesting, and I guess you could call it a fact, but statistics, one of the most interesting facts is the fact that the best way to be a homeowner is for your parents to be a homeowner. If you come from a family where you're going to be the first generation, the first person who's going to try to buy a house, it is so much harder. It's exponentially harder than somebody who was raised with their parents being a homeowner, whether that is connections, whether that is a tell about how much money you come from, more importantly, the education and the know-how and the how to play the system, how to get a loan, how to talk to mortgage. All those things are actually passed on generationally. And if you come from somebody who doesn't own a house, it's just much harder for you to be the first one in your family to do so. And it's the same with everything, including education, not even just the nepotism, not even just like the ones that you see, you know, my dad went to Harvard, so I got into Harvard. That's a huge problem. But obviously, if somebody values education themselves, they're going to push their kids much harder to do better in school, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're just focusing on surviving, on just getting food on the table, you're not going to necessarily care about those extracurricular activities and getting a tutor. And not only can you not afford it, it's just not going to be passed on in the same way to you. And that affects everybody. It doesn't even just have to be the richest of the rich who have a trust fund or who are an heiress. It affects people just on a day-to-day life teaching lesson. And
yeah, we are.
Poverty continues to build like a snowball.
Yeah, and there was an addendum to that, and great you point that out. I read of a family, and I think it could be universally a family thing, but it's cultural. where everybody lives in the same house until everybody can afford their own house. And they don't leave that house until everyone in that house can afford their own house. So they stay in that house. Everybody puts wealth into that house, wealth into that house.
That's once how that it works in China. I know that.
Yeah, it works. You've heard of this, right? This isn't something off the wall.
Yeah, and in China, even though they're communists, I would like to point out that they have a 90% home ownership rate. They are the fourth highest in the world of home ownership.
That is insane.
That's because because communists can work. Like, communism does work if you're, like, if they don't, it's not like they just hand out houses, but there's a difference between personal property and
yeah. Yeah, no, I get you.
Public property.
Yeah, and it seems like the longer we ignore it, the bigger that gap between the haves and the have-nots becomes. And if we don't address it now, that gap's going to turn into a canyon so wide, nobody's going to be able to cross it, right? So I guess the higher point on this and the conclusion of our segment is, what's the takeaway? Poverty policies sound great in theory, but when you dig a little deeper, you start to see the cracks. From UBI to affordable housing, it's all not just about what sounds good on paper. It's about what works in the real world for real everyday people. I mean, what do you think about that, Jagez, wrapping our segment up? Does that sound fair to you?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, so we can't just address poverty, right? Like, poverty is a much bigger problem. There's not going to be one solution. We can't just throw UBI at it and then all of it goes away. We need to start addressing the system, the root causes, the corporations price gouging people,
yes.
BlackRock buying all the property.
All the property.
We need to start, there's so many different tendrils that we have to start looking at, and we have to kind of fix the system, really. We can't just plug the holes. We have to rebuild the structure.
I mean, that's right. I mean, the higher point here, poverty is a ticking time bomb, and if we don't figure out how to defuse it soon, we're all going to feel the explosion. Guys, thank you for coming in again and listening to our podcast about poverty. This has been Let Me Take You Higher. I am Mr. Villain, or Jagezis. And guys, you can see Jagezis on TikTok. This guy's phenomenal, always putting on new content. And that's Jagezis, Jagayssus on TikTok. I suggest you go there, follow him, give him a like and a follow. But guys, thank you for joining us. And well, Jagezis, I'm signing out.
Bye.
My money don't jiggle jiggle, it folds. I like to see you wiggle wiggle, for sure. It makes me want to dribble dribble. You know, riding in my Fiat, you really have to see it. 6'2" in a compact, no slack. But luckily the seats go back, I got a knack to relax. In my mind, I'm sipping some red wine.
I sip bruised from chalices, holding my palaces. Crib is so cramped, you suck a supper from paralysis. Rhymes, I ride them in the castle. You try to diss me and pretty soon your arsehole squat.
The United Nations plans to end world poverty by 2030. It's the first of 17 sustainable development goals designed to make the world a fairer, safer, and better place.
But have you thought about what that actually means? Poverty is not being able to afford basic things like food, water, healthcare, or a safe home. You may already have some idea what that looks like. But poverty happens everywhere.
And it's not the same for everyone. Sometimes it affects entire countries and generations of families. Other people might suffer from situational poverty, where it's caused by a sudden event like an illness or losing a job. Or systemic poverty, caused by inequality or discrimination. The main thing is, poverty can affect anyone, anywhere. And right now, a massive 700 million people live on less than $1.90 a day. Think about the whole world as just 10 people. At least one of those people would have less than $2 a day to live on. Could you do that? So why don't we just print a big pile of money and give it away? Well, it's complicated. One of the reasons that poverty is such a big challenge is because it can have many different causes. Imagine there's a natural disaster in your city. Damage to buildings might mean you wouldn't have a home. If businesses closed down, there would be less jobs. And poor healthcare or sanitation could lead to disease, which can mean choosing between paying for medicine or food. and poverty can cause other problems. Not being able to afford a place to live can lead to discrimination. Without a permanent address, it can be harder to access public services or open a bank account. Poverty even forces some young people to work instead of getting an education. And sometimes, it's as simple as no money means no food. You might think there will always be poverty and it's just something we have to live with. But it's actually getting better. Since 1990, 1.1 billion people have moved out of poverty. That's about the same as the population of Europe and the USA combined. Governments have invested in economic growth. Charities have raised money and awareness through campaigns, and individuals have come up with innovative new solutions like drought-resistant crops and inexpensive solar power. So what can you do about poverty right now in your own city?
Hey there, darlings. It's Kay Nicola, your go-to girl for all the sizzling, scandalous, and downright head-scratching news straight out of Tinseltown. So grab your popcorn because the Hollywood rumor mill is spinning faster than a Kardashian at a product launch. First up, the strikes are finally over and the celebs are crawling out of their mansions like they've just survived the apocalypse. You'd think these stars forgot how to function without red carpets and paparazzi. Speaking of, get this Hollywood's latest trend, going off-grid. Yeah, because there's nothing more authentic than unplugging while your personal assistant holds your Wi-Fi router hostage. Keep living the dream, folks. And let's not forget, tomorrow night is the Emmy Awards. The glitz and the glamour and, of course, the drama. I've got my predictions, so let's dive into all the juiciest categories. All eyes are on Succession, all right, for best drama series, but don't count out The Last of Us. If it wins, expect Twitter to implode in a mix of joy and nerd rage. Over in the comedy category, Ted Lasso is the heavy favorite again. About Elementary might just pull its last minute upset, like a plot twist no one has saw coming. Now the real drama is off screen. Word on the street is that a few nominees aren't even showing up. Rumor has it one A-lister is skipping out because they weren't front row material. Sweetie, it's the Emmys, not a high school prom, relax. And can someone explain why two of the presenters had a huge spat during rehearsal? Let's just say the real showdown might be on stage. With less awards and more side eye. Oh, and for the best part, Diva has demanded not one, some diva, not two, but three wardrobe changes throughout one night, the whole night. Guess someone didn't get enough attention during the strikes, huh? All right, my time is up. Hollywood awaits for no one. Until next time, this has been your fabulous Kay Nicola, keeping you in the loop with just enough gossip to make you feel better about your own life. Stay glamorous.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Let Me Take You Higher, the podcast. Big thanks to our special guests and a huge shout out to our incredible sponsors. You guys are literally the wind beneath our podcast wings. Remember, this show was dreamed up and brought to life by yours truly, Mr. Villain. And it's all made possible by BC Entertainment LLC, a proud subsidiary of Big Cheddar Music LLC. All rights are reserved by BC Entertainment, so don't even think about touching that dial without permission. Until next time, keep your minds elevated and your vibes higher. This is Mr. Villain signing off. Stay tuned, stay sharp, and stay forever gifted and lifted.
When life storms rage, the skies grow dim. We gather the shards, piece by piece within. Through tears and trials, we find our might. Let me take you higher toward the light. Let me take you higher beyond the pain. Where broken dreams mend and hope remains. We'll rise from ashes like a phoenix bold. In the symphony of resilience, our stories unfold.
life storms rage, the skies grow dim. We gather the shards, piece by piece within. Through tears and trials, we find our might. Let me take you higher toward the light. Let me take you higher beyond the pain. We're broken dreams, mend, and hope remains. We'll rise from ashes like a phoenix bold. In the symphony of resilience, our stories unfold.